The Buddha had a lot of concepts to help us understand how we cause ourselves stress and suffering and worry, agitation. One of my favorites is the concept of sankhara, which basically means the stuff that we add on to our experience, the way we edit and change the basic bare information that's coming in. If you look at, I'm going to use for tonight the sort of metaphor of a reality TV show. If you think of like those reality shows, they must shoot massive amounts of footage, and but then of course they edit it and they do all this stuff to make it dramatic. Because actually, I'm sure if you watch just the bare footage of just people sort of sitting and complaining and whining at each other and, you know, hanging around in the Jersey Shore or whatever reality shows do, it would be pretty fucking boring, right? So they really, you know, edit it, they add voiceovers, they repeat, they really go into close-ups, really dramatic moments. And although we like to think that we live in reality, in fact, we live in our own little reality programs. We're each the star of our own little reality show. Mine is called My Life. Yours is called Your Life. And we have, well, that's not what you necessarily call yours. You might have a very nice name for your program, more original than My Life. I don't know why I told you what you call your program. That's not fair of me. But we have lots of different episodes. Some episodes is called, gee, my job sucks. Sometimes our episodes are called, gee, I suck. Sometimes the episodes are called, get a load of this asshole I have to work with. Or get a load of this crummy roommate that I have to live with. Some episodes are called, or on the topic matter of, if only I had majored in something else or done something else, dated someone else. If only. Sometimes we have entire fantasy episodes. Just like reality programs, we have little commercials. They're called our wish fulfillments. Oh, if I get a better apartment, everything will be solved. If I get a different job, everything will be better. You know, just like commercials selling us on, like, if you buy this brand of fabric softener, your husband will love you. We have our little commercials in our head. If I only got rid of this roommate, everything would be good. And all suffering would be avoided from here on in. We have our reenactments. You ever see those reality shows where they have reenactments? The murderer is played by some actor. The policeman is played by an actor. Well, we have our own reenactments. They're called memories. And our memories are just as full of shit as those reenactments are. We like to think that our memories are, yeah, I know what happened. I was there. I know. But actually, when you look at the clinical findings on what people experience, and then you actually compare it with, you know, the other people's versions and just like that, all the clinical data that goes into eyewitness accounts and into the subjectivity of experience, we find that, boy, we're not really very aware of anything that's going on. And when we recall it, in such self, you know, flattering terms. So, and then sometimes we have the bleak, dark, you know, in the TV shows where, like, they have a horrible sequence and then the character wakes up and it's all a bad dream. Well, we have that, too. It's called worrying about the future. We can go into entire fantasy sequence about trying to figure out the worst possible shit that could ever possibly happen. So, all these little... And then finally, of course, the thing we do the most is we have the voiceover. You know, voiceover in TV shows. When we last left Sarah, she was going back to her shitty job. She was whatever. So, we have the same little voiceovers. We have the same, it's called thoughts. Geez, I wish I could just get through this stupid day. Or what? Geez, I can't wait until I'm whatever. Or whatever thoughts we add beneath life. These are the voiceovers. So we have all these. And then we too, just like in TV shows, can like follow one person. You know, can follow one character around. We too can do that. Oh, I don't like this guy. No, I don't like him at all. No, what's he up to now? I don't like the... Oh, I've never liked that person. Or, that person doesn't seem to like me. No, they still don't seem to like me. Or, ooh, they're very attractive. Yes, I like the way that person's looking. Come back. So we too can focus and follow people around and do close-ups. We're editing all the time. And we don't like to realize it, but we're editing so much. We're even editing out all the time the boring bits of life. Sometimes it's really fun when you talk to somebody who one of those people who doesn't like to hear things that they don't want to hear, and they just sort of blankly stare, and it's like they totally didn't hear you, and you're like, hello? Hey, we're not going to get that done. Hello? Yeah, so people can do that even. We have amazing techniques. So, why do we live in these little programs, these fantasies, distortions, self-seeking reversions of events, these constant obsessive recollections of the past or projections in the future? Why do we love these, what the Buddha called sankharas? Well, they serve, they play into a lot of things that are very attractive to us. One, my little fantasies are about me. I could think about myself for a very large period of the day. You could probably think about yourself too for long periods of time. So very often our little fantasies sequence, our obsessive worries and daydreams and dramas and stuff, it's all about our favorite character, me. Two, they're very dramatic in the sense that I experience everything that you do is happening to me. You experience everything that, if we're having an interaction, you experience everything that I do is happening to you. The truth of the matter is that people just do what they do. They're not doing it to me or to you. If somebody's having a bad day and I just happen to be around, they're going to be short with me. They're not doing it to me. They're just having a bad day. But I perceive it as, what an asshole. That person was really mean to me. Really short with me. So my subjectivity blows out what is simply a person doing the same thing to everyone. It's as if suddenly it's happening to me. I also tend to believe that what I'm experiencing, only I really know. Nobody else has really known this level of frustration that I have right now. Nobody knows what it's like to miss a train in the morning. Nobody really knows. They might think they know, but my feelings are deeper, more painful, more horrible, more real, more mine. I can share about it, but still there's always that little doubt that anybody really perceives or experiences the world exactly the way that we do. And then finally, also, of course, one of the attractions is that there's cliffhangers. We can live in dramas about what's going to happen tomorrow and try to figure it out next week's episode. What will happen to me tomorrow? What will that person say? Will I have a job? Will I not have a job? Will I get this apartment? Will I sell my book? Will my screenplay get bought? So, but all these things aside, one of the profound insights that the Buddha had is that the real reason we, or the deepest reason that we're attracted to these ankaras, these fantasies, daydreams, inner monologues, these things that we're adding on to our experience, is because they're distracting us. They're distractions. They're bread and circuses. They're things that are pulling us away. What are they pulling us away from? Well, they're pulling us away from that we're trying to find too much of our happiness in the world. And the world is, as the Buddha said, impermanence. Everything gets swept away. Nothing can be truly owned. We're just borrowing the things we have. The world is not, in the end, capable of filling up or answering our cravings. The world is a wonderful thing, but it's ultimately, if we're trying to get our lasting peace of mind, our sense of security, it's not sufficient. And there's a part of us that's aware of it, but there's a part of us that's, there's a part of us that's aware that we're not in control. And so because we're aware that there's this constant niggling doubt, shit, anything can happen at any time. I'm really not as secure as I want to believe. I really don't have, no matter what I'm trying to do here in my career, my relationship, my friendships, my book, whatever it is I'm doing, I'm trying to get my lasting happiness and security from it. There's this niggling realization that nothing is guaranteed, and that at the end, all this stuff has the shelf life of yogurt sometimes. It really is so beyond our control what other people think about us, what other people do, whether how much time we have alive, what's going to happen, what events are going to happen in the world. Literally, all of us could wake up tomorrow without any money in the bank. I wouldn't put it past the people in Wall Street. There is no guarantees in the world. And so there's this underlying sense of unease about the fact that the world offers no guarantees, no lasting source of true peace. It can offer beautiful experiences, don't get me wrong. There can be beautiful experiences in life. But if we're trying to get the lasting sense of fulfillment, happiness, a sense of self-worth from things or transitory experiences, we will ultimately come up frustrated. And these stories that we live in form distractions from this nagging insecurity that we're aware that our that are campaigns for self-improvement in the world, for getting things accomplished, for achieving big things and reputations, are ultimately there. They can make us feel good for a while, but they're all subject to change and all conditional upon factors beyond our control. Even if we write the greatest book, there's always the possibility that publishers won't buy it. We can do the best job at work and still lose it because of some number cruncher. We can do wonderful things and still not have it appreciated. So everything is conditional, and there's a great sense of unease, and our fantasies give us the illusion of control. I like to think if I can figure it all out, the worst things that are going to happen, if I can figure it all out, there's this underlying illusion that I can avert it, that I'm in control. Even the darkest fantasies have that allure that, wow, if I really figure it out, I'll be prepared. I'll somehow be prepared. the truth is the Buddha said that in life we are all going to get old, we're going to get sick, not only that, and die, we're also going to experience people doing things we don't like. They will do that, by the way, my experience. We'll be separated from things we love, and we'll wind up with things we don't love, and there'll be all kinds of unavoidable, shitty, shit-hitting the fan things. This is called what the Buddha said, the first arrow. But the good news is that even with these first arrows, we still have a wonderful opportunity for peace, for true happiness. The Buddha said that while the world is outside of our control, we do have control over the things that can make us truly peaceful and happy. The first thing we have to do is we have to wake up. It's what the word Buddha means. It means he who has awoken from the trance of his fantasies, his daydreams, the living in the past or the future. I mean, these things have their purpose, but not as much as we use them. Not as much as we fall into them. And I'll talk to you about the purposes in a second, but going back to this waking up theme, when the Matrix came out about 12 years ago, don't get me wrong, not a very great film by any means. Anything with Keanu Reeves is going to be a slog. Unless you're Keanu, however you pronounce his name. Not the easiest actor for me to be with for 2 hours, but I worked with it. I give him a shot. The thing, though, that all of my Buddhist friends and all my lefty friends, we all really enjoyed the central metaphor, which is we're living in this delusion, this matrix, this computer program, which is diverting us from the fact that we're actually all in these really sort of pod-like conditions where this gigantic sort of corporation is sucking the life force out of us. Now, if you're really into Marxism or, you know, progressive politics, you can view the moment when, I guess his name is Neo, takes the red pill and wakes up and sees the truth. You can see that as waking up out of this sort of capitalist delusion, this fixation on commodities. Yes, my Nike sneakers will make everything okay. And then you see, wow, really, I'm like sort of alienated from my life. But we're not a Marxist group, so we can put that aside. We're not a Marxist group. We're just not a... But in a Buddhist framework, there is very much the sense of waking up into the present. Waking up from the trance of fear, of obsessive worry, of fantasies, of all the editing and the repeating and the voiceovers and the stuff that we need to add on to life to give us the sense that we're in control, or that we give the illusion that we'll have an edge. And the Buddha said the most peaceful state in life is letting go of all this stuff we're adding on and being with bare attention, being with what's happening in the body, being with what's happening around us without feeling the need to push away, to add all this commentary, to cling on to things that are passing, to create these fantasies or these worries or these plans to try to control everything. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about how some of this stuff can work in our favor, but we live far too little just in the bare present. What's happening in the body, what's happening right now in the mind, what's happening right now. We're adding too much to it. And that adding that we're doing causes stress. It doesn't bring us the answer. You can't figure out security or happiness. It just can't be done, can't be figured out, can't be worked out. It's something that can be experienced, but not figured out. So we have to take the red pill, folks. In the movie, the blue pill, just you go back into being in the Matrix fantasy, but then that eventually what happens is your entire life just is passed in this video game. There's also that wonderful analogy of the Road Runner. You like the Road Runner? I hope you like the Road Runner. Every kid at one point likes the Road Runner. I hated the chasing after the coyote? Fucking hated the coyote. So anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. The coyote is like this prim little thing that races on ahead and always wins, but the Road Runner runs after him, goes right off the cliff, but he's still running and his feet are moving in midair, and he looks at the camera and he's like, something's wrong here. Something's wrong, but he still doesn't go down. And then he looks down and then his legs stretch really long and he goes, zoop, bang! And then there's this, you know, puff of smoke. And so basically what the Buddha is saying is, look down. There's nothing there. The solidity that we think is in careers, where our money is, or our 401ks, or everything, the things that we think are going to guarantee us happiness, there is no solidity there. You're running rapidly, our feet are spinning, but there's nothing below us. And the time is to let go and to fall into the present. Wow, I'm working this metaphor. Wow, I can take this shit really so much further than I should. So, anyway, you get the idea. Wake up. So, we don't wake up by coming fully into the sight or senses of what's going on around us. The Buddha said you wake up first by relaxing the body, going first into the body, because when the body is tense, that's what allows all this sankhara, this fantasy, this adding on to life. But if we breathe, if we relax the stress areas, that's the way to stop, to undercut the obsessive fantasizing, worries, doubts, concerns, the voiceovers, the endless thinking, is by first relaxing what's giving it its core support. When we're in this daydream life or this edited life, we're there because the body has tensed up. That's what happens when we're not fully present. The body goes into a defensive, protective mode. So that's the first step. The second step is to then become aware of what moods the mind is in, to acknowledge, boy, I'm in an anxious state today. I've got so much to do, and I'm just trying to get through life. Just acknowledge what mood we're in. What mood has the mind been in? Am I in a mood of just aversion today? Am I just wanting everything to go away and leave me alone? I'm so practiced in speaking in the noisiest sangha in the world. I really like it. Am I really in wanting and craving? Am I in that place that's just wanting to acquire? You know, sometimes when we're really in a campaign of buying things on the web, it's because there's this underlying think of stuff of worry or something we're not looking at. The job is not satisfactory, whatever. And so this mood that we're in, this acquiring, buying, shopping, sleeping with different people, whatever it is, it can be driven by something that we're not looking at. And the way we look at it first is by acknowledging what mood we're in, relaxing the body, the breath, and then seeing what's there beneath it. Now, since the mind is such a good storyteller, fantasy weaver, adding on of sankharas, editing, all the things we do, the Buddha and a lot of the monks that I've studied with have said, as a transitory state, use this ability skillfully. So one way we can use this ability skillfully and to a limited degree is, rather than go to the fantasies that give us the illusion of control, like we can figure out the future, or we can rework the past, neither of which you'll ever be able to do, a skillful use of the mind is to replay something that you've done in your recently that you're proud of. Reflect and feel really good on times you were generous, a time that you helped someone, a time that you were you took care of yourself, a time when you were honest but not in a way that meant to hurt someone, but in a way that was addressing something that was difficult that you worked through. These are what the Buddha called kagasati and sila nusati, kaganusati, sila nusati. He also talked about reflecting on times that we've been really peaceful, just bringing to mind times that we've been really peaceful and remembering what it was that brought about the peace. Now, for example, sometimes we like to think, wow, the last time I went out to Montauk, it was really nice. I sat there in a beach chair and the waves came in and it must have been Montauk. It wasn't Montauk. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure Montauk's very nice. I haven't been there in a long, long time, but sounds like a great place. But it's the fact that when we go to places like that, we really relax. We really settle in. We really give ourselves permission to let go of our jobs, let go of our worries, our fantasies, and we really fall into just being truly present. And when we reflect on the times we've been peaceful, we reflect on that, oh, that letting go in the body, that letting go of all the stuff I was worrying about, and just being truly present. Eventually, as we turn the inner additions, these little voiceovers, these little fantasies, these little memories of things we've done, as we turn from being unskillful to real, concrete, specific things that we've done skillfully, or B, we can also think of things that are really virtuous, reasonable, possible things that we can do that we know will bring about lasting happiness. Rather than saying, oh, if I only get this new job or this better apartment, reflect, I know the thing that makes me feel good really for a long time is when I help someone, when I take care of myself, when I exercise, when I do my yoga. So I want to really set my intention there. And I will just simply set that intention, but I will not cling to it and I won't live in it. And it's a repeating fantasy or thing that I go into that will keep me from actually being skillful right now. Eventually, as we turn this capability of adding onto life from things that are just distractions into skillful, intentional building and reflections that are skillful, we'll become less and less attached to it as a way to get through life. Because eventually, as they become more skillful, they also they become less cliffhangery and less like, what's going to happen next? Am I going to have enough money in the future? What's going to happen next? Oh, if only I could figure it out. The thought, wow, I did something really nice for a friend today. In my experience, it feels good, it relaxes me, but I'm really not that, it's not a show I want to watch over and over and over again in my head. It repurposes me, it relaxes the body, it gets me back to a new perspective. So it's a skillful way to deal with stress, but it's not the lasting solution. The real lasting solution is what the Buddha called just relaxing into the body, into what's happening now, not shrinking the mind into these fantasies, but becoming truly spacious, present, aware, and not feeling the need to add all the stuff that we normally do. So that's the basic concept of Sankara. I hope that some part of it was interesting. Don't feel, by the way, when you're reflecting on skillful things that you've done, that it's false. Because I'll tell you something. We really like to think about the one little stupid thing that we did in life and blow it way out of proportion. We can really get fixated on something stupid we said and say, oh my God, for hours. But the focusing on really feeling good about something small that we did, we tend to give that short trip. So try practicing with that. Thank you for listening. Hope you got something out of it. Now is your time to ask any questions or any topics or share about anything that you'd like. So thank you.